Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is the agents of karma. The very first aphorism of karma says, there is no karma unless there is a being to make it and to feel its effect. That means there must be someone or some creature who must act and also be there to receive the reaction, because the law of karma is a law of action and reaction. Till then, karma cannot really operate. So in one sense, and especially we think of karma more in relation to human beings, so each and every human being therefore is an agent of karma, because karma can operate only through some agency, especially the human being. And we act when we think, when we feel, and we actually perform action. All these three really is considered to be acting, and all these three will also bring us reaction. Then again, we act either for the good or for the ill of another person. And here we see that quite unknowingly, based on the past affinities, we are continually affecting each other. So, Mr. Judge, in letters that have helped me, has to say, our affinities anon damn us and they anon save us. The karmic affinities which we have built in the past brings us again together, and then we end up helping that person or we end up hindering the person in some way. He has given example in notes on the Bhagavad Gita that suppose I had a friend and then I took easy life. The friend takes spiritual life. We live out that life, and then this karmic affinity which is there will bring us together. Maybe not in immediately next life, but a few lives later. We will come in contact with each other. But we have built a very strong inner bond. And then this friend will have the power to touch me inwardly. Now he has been following the spiritual path. I have been following an easy life. But when we are brought together, in some way he will influence me so that I find myself taking interest in spiritual life and I turn the corner. The person, that friend, has become an agent of karma. We see this kind of agency. Sometimes your son or brother is following an absolutely straight path. Then again, he has a friend. He has taken to drinking and gambling. There is such a close relation that you find your brother or son following his example and going off the track. This again becomes an agent, not agent for good, but agent for ill. In a much larger way, we find incidents, and one of them, well known to all of us, is about the courtesan, that is a sort of a prostitute, Amrapali. We know the story of Amrapali, that she is really enamored of one of the Buddhist monks. And therefore she approaches Buddha and says that let this monk come and stay with me for a month. She is very confident that with her charm and beauty, she would be able to turn this monk from the path. The monk stays there for one whole month. And then he says, can I go now? The month is over. But he is not moved at all by her charm. And Buddha knew well, it seems, though the other bhikshus, they didn't really approve of it. Buddha had full confidence in this monk, and that's why he sends him. So they come back, and Amrapali follows him. Comes to the monastery, comes to that order, meets Buddha and says, I want to become a bhikshuni. And says, actually very, very significant words, that I could not charm your monk, but his spirituality charmed me to imitate him. You see, What a wonderful thing if you can become an agent of karma in this manner. So these are some of the things where very glaringly you can see. But even otherwise, we are told that in everything that we do, knowingly or unknowingly, we are becoming the agents of karma. In a quite technical sense, we are given an understanding of those which are the agents of karma. And these agents of karma we know in theosophy as the elementals. We have the five elements, earth, water, air, fire and ether. These are made up of points of life or centers of force, the points of energy. These are what we call as lives or elementals. So water is made up of water elementals, air is made up of air elementals and so on. These are the basic agents. We say thoughts are seeds of karma and we say elementals are carriers of karma. So they are the real agents of karma who take your karma from one life to another, which we know as skandhas, vasanas, sanskaras and so on. We are given in the Eternal Verities an example that if you are angry and then you bang the book against the table, what happens? You have given the impression of anger to all those elementals, because let us see, let us understand that everything is made up of elementals. The book, the table, the microphone, our bodies, the tree. Ultimately, we say scientifically, it's all made up of molecules and atoms. Go deeper and even an atom is made up of still tiny, more tiny units called the elementals. So it is the elementals which form this table or that book. And when you bang it with anger, in the Eternal Verities we are told that you have given your angry impressions. Now this book is picked up by another person, you've forgotten about it, but the impressions are there. More terrible the anger, more deep the impression, that person's picking it up and then it arouses anger in him and doesn't know exactly why did I feel angry. You see? So this is the way in which I have become agent for making someone angry, and my agent are elementals. This we are doing on a larger scale, theosophy says, which we have seen many times and we are very familiar, that not me alone, but the whole humanity. We are not all the time having positive emotions. More often than not, there is a negativity. And there is anger, there is violence, there is hatred, there is selfishness. Where are we really putting these impressions? Yes, it is there in the astral light, but it is also there on the Mother Earth herself. No wonder that James Lovelock has to give Gaia hypothesis and say, Gaia, Mother Earth, it's a living entity. And he goes on to explain how scientifically, just like a human body functions, so also is the Mother Earth. And if this living entity we are giving continually this kind of impressions of anger and greed and hatred and violence and so on, we mean to say that they are just like gone away after a while? No. Billions of people are every day giving these impressions. And if that is so, and if I give such impressions to my body, we know what happens. Soon I would be having ulcers, cancer, depending upon what impression I have given. If it is anxiety, if it is anger, if it is suppressed emotions, I would have one or the other disease because it is all locked up and then it comes out. Somehow it erupts in the inner sickness of the inner man. It is seen on the body. The same thing happens with Mother Earth. So we are being told that these impressions are taken from you by the elementals. They are impressed on the earth. And then the appropriate time comes. And that is the exploding point. Mother Earth cannot bear anything anymore. That exploding point, you will have either the tsunami, the earthquake, the coronavirus pandemic, the cholera pandemic. In one way or the other, it will erupt. And then, of course, it is a reaction which is brought to us. And so these elementals technically are the agents of karma. But they are acting. under still higher agents, and that we all know in the Hindu philosophy, we know them as the Lipikas. They are more, in a colloquial language, are known as Chitragupta, and we always thought as children that Chitragupta is one gigantic man sitting with a very huge book in which he is writing down every man's karma and everything that is happening in the world. But this Chitragupta, or the Lipika, as Lipika is, Lipi means writing. Actually, that Lipika is maintaining the record of the karma of everything that happens, including of the individual and collectivity of humanity. Where? In the astral light. And so in the Hindu philosophy, that astral light is called Agrasandini. The Agrasandini, if you come across, we would not know what it is, but that is what HPV says is our astral light, where this whole record is there. And then when the time comes, they are the dispenser. They are the ones who will do meeting out the reward and punishment depending upon your karma through the agency of the elementals. And she goes to explain it in a different way by bringing about or bringing into picture other agents, and they are called the four Maharajas. In the secret doctrine, she talks about it. In Hindu philosophy also, we are very well aware that there are supposed to be the deities which are like the guardian angels of the four directions or even eight directions. Not only east, west, north, south. You have northeast, northwest, which we call in Gujarati language as Ishan, Agni, Nairutya, Vayavya. All those, it's not just like that we have not four but the eight sides. Sometimes we talk about easterly winds, northeasterly winds, that will bring monsoon. There is a significance. So these are the winds which are going to be governed by the Maharajas. The Maharajas are very high beings. They preside over them, but they preside also over these elementals which are behind these winds. And so she says that the Roman Catholics say that the winds coming from the north and the west direction are not supposed to be auspicious. They will bring you calamities, they will bring you the pandemic, they will bring you the epidemic of diseases and so on. The other east and the other direction are good and so on. And she says it has a basis. And the basis is that the karma of humanity. How will nature give the backlash to your own karma? And this is by means of some physical agent. The physical agent is the wind. And the subtler agent is your elementals. And a still more subtle agent is your Maharaja, who is presiding over north, east, west, whatever direction. So this is a technical explanation as to how and who really is the agent. We always say God is angry and therefore we are being punished or rewarded. But there is no Parabrahmam who is directly connected or interested in taking care of an individual or even an individual cosmos. That Parabrahmam is above and beyond it. But there is a long line of agents who are carrying on the decree of the all-pervasive law of karma. Coming back to human beings, we saw in a more general sense how we are all agents of karma. Every word, every thought, every action has impact on something or the other. We become agents for good or evil. But HPB, or rather Mr. Judge, mentions more particularly the men being agents in a special sense. And this he explains in one of his articles where he says that there are high beings who are concentrators of karma. They tend to accelerate your karma. This explanation is very important for us to bear in mind. Till we came to theosophy, we always thought it's a sort of a miracle that something like this should happen. Now, what is it that he is talking about? In what way and who are these concentrators of karma for the good? So, example is given. Often you hear a person going and meeting a wise being an advanced person, an adept, a sannyasi, a saintly man. He tells about his trouble. And then, in a little while, he is given assurance that it will go away, and it goes away. A particular example is given by Mr. Jaj, that in the Bible you have a Roman officer called the centurion. His name is Centurion. Now this is a Roman officer who is very troubled because his servant is ill for many, many months and he can't move his body. So when he hears that Jesus has come to town, he goes all the way to meet him and says, I have this servant, he doesn't get well, can you not do something? Jesus hears it out, knowing probably that karma permits this kind of working and healing the person, he agrees and says, come, I will come with you. The important thing is, the Roman officer says, but why should you come? You only have to give command. Don't you see me? I am a Roman officer and I don't go personally and tell my soldiers. I command and say, let this be done. The soldiers follow the command and whatever I want is done. Jesus is very impressed and says, look at this man's faith. He tells the crowd, I have never seen faith like this. And so he turns to him and says, whatever you believe in will certainly happen. Go home and it will be done. Now, this is nothing short of miracle. This man comes, maybe he has come from a few kilometers or miles away. He'll reach his home in one day, half day, few hours. The servant, when he goes home, is going to be healed. Now, what is this? And here Mr. Jaj gives this explanation. One explanation we know is, your time has come to be healed, and at that time you meet the Great One, and he only becomes an instrument or an agent in healing. Anything else could have been an instrument. Maybe you got the right medicine and you would have healed, and then that doctor would become the agent. Here it's a great being or someone who is a healer who becomes a zariya or an agent. But here Mr. Jaj says, this is an example of the concentrator of karma. And what do we mean by that? See, our karma can be slow karma, and then that karma can spread over many years, or it can spread over many lifetimes. Sometimes you see some people's life, there are little knocks in life. Every few months there'll be a body pain, every few months there will be some little calamity in the family, every few years there is a problem, but pretty well it's a more or less a smooth life. It happens in piecemeal. What happens here? The concentrator of karma has done something whereby there is an acceleration. Something which would have spread out over a long period of time is concentrated all at once. Yes, the person is going to suffer acutely, come out of it. That means he is not going or getting away from karma. That which he would have suffered for many months, he's experiencing it in some way within few hours or few days, and then he's healed. This is called acceleration or concentration of karma. And so that's what happens. Many times you hear a person goes, meets a rishi, meets a swami, who is a real, genuine, pure kind of a person, says, don't worry, it will happen. And it happens. So they are able to have a good look at the storehouse of your karma and know that the relief is possible, and they only accelerate it. On the other hand, you have the concentrators of karma on the negative side. And this is very important for us to understand. We all believe in the evil eye. There are people with evil eye, and it is no superstition. Theosophy says, HPB says, it's a reality. People have evil eye, and she calls it Jetatura in Isis Unveiled. And then she gives examples of people who just look at the toad, they look at the birds, and one glance and they are dead. This kind of thing is there. Luckily we don't have that kind of evil eye. But evil eye is only destructive power of thought. And what is that? You can think of a charge rod. If I'm carrying a charge rod and moving everywhere, if I'm doing like this, it can touch anyone. Wherever it touches, it will give a shock or it might burn the thing. This person is carrying a charge rod, which is his eyes. And through the eye, especially, when he is feeling jealous, evil eye is nothing but acute form of envy or jealousy. It's a feeling that if I can't have, no one else can have. How can you have such a beautiful car? How can you have such a well-furnished flat in this posh area? How can you rise and rise and rise in your career and I can't get even a single promotion? There are many, many ways. How can you be so beautiful and how can you have such good dresses? There are so many types of envy. And when you have that envy and look enviously at that person, if I can't, you also cannot, then it affects. Now, what has happened? When there is a major kind of a calamity coming because of the evil eye, we are told that he is acting as a concentrator of karma. Something which would have happened slowly is coming all at once and bringing a major calamity in your life. But that means we should not curse the person with the evil eye. In a way, he's helping us to liquidate the karma quickly, something which we would have taken a longer time to go through. But it is our own karma. He's only an agent for accelerating it. Now, this does not mean and should not give us license to become an agent of karma in this manner. Someone has harmed us, someone has done something wrong in the society, and you feel that I am becoming an agent of karma. I will see to it. Personally, I will go with a crowd, give him a punishment, we will stone him to death, we will give him to the police, we will do this, we will do that. And HVB says, please don't. Try to become an agent of karma in this manner. Because already the law of karma is going to do its work. She or maybe judge is quoting St. Paul, who says, vengeance is mine and I shall repay. This is how karma speaks. Karma is saying, vengeance is mine and I shall repay. If there is any wrong kind of a punishment someone has got, I will repay. That is to say, I will give the compensation. And vengeance, if I have to give punishment, I will give punishment. You please do not interfere, because if you take that law of karma in your own hand, then you are giving the punishment. The law has to give. So now the law will have to give compensation instead of the punishment. So you are working for his compensation. Additionally, you do not know how to punish. Law really is an intelligent, all-seeing law, impartial and just. In doing justice here, you will do injustice somewhere else. And not only that, punish in such a way that he can turn the corner. This is what HPP says. She says even human law should be reformative, not punitive. It is simply punitive, nothing good comes out of it. But if it is reformative, punish in a way where he has a chance to turn the corner, that is how the law of karma will work. It will not crush the person to death. It will not make him so incapable that he is not capable of really learning any lesson. It will give adequate punishment. So, this way, we should never try to become an agent of karma by taking everything in our hand, especially for punishing. Nor should we become agent of karma in giving so much of pleasure and good to the person and spoil the person so much that, again, he ends up going quite on the opposite direction. The law will take care, and in a wise and adequate manner. In the Gita, we come across only one sentence in the 11th chapter. It is called Vishwarupa Darshan. We all know in the Vishwarupa Darshan is a stage where Krishna finds it necessary to show his real form to Arjuna. And then Arjuna finds that all along he thought he is only a human being, a little more wise and a little more talented, a little more strong. But he is someone so mystical, so gigantic, so very powerful, with such majesty and grandeur. He didn't realize. Anyway, so in that chapter, after showing the Vishwarupa, all that, Krishna tells Arjuna, I am time matured. Come hither for the destruction of these creatures. Even if you do not kill them, someone else will kill them. So be thou my immediate agent. Again, the agency. Nimitta matram bhava. That's what Arjuna is told. So here he is saying, I am time mature. Come hither for the destruction of these creatures. Who are these creatures? All of those who are in the Kaurava army, the who's who, the Duryodhana, including the grandsire like the Bhishma, Drona, all of these are there. And certainly Arjuna is not going to or not wanting to kill them. And Krishna is still, after showing the Vishwarupa, he is persuading him that I am time matured and I have come hither for the destruction of these creatures. If you don't kill, somebody else will kill. So be thou my immediate agent. Now what is this time matured? In Hindu philosophy, you find the word time as kala. It's a very appropriate word. You know, even Shiva is called Kala Bhairav. It is such a time of which you become Biru. Biru means afraid. And that Kala, the appropriate time, when it comes, Shiva the destroyer lifts up that thing like that, whether it is person, thing, whatever. So we are Biru of that Kala, which brings destruction, of course, for regeneration. So this Kala is the appropriate time, appointed time. It is Vidhi. It is Daiva. It is fate. This is the beauty of Sanskrit language. So you have Kala, which is the fate, the Vidhi, the Daiva, the so on, the appointed time. And so a little story is given to say that a child is bitten by a snake. And he dies. Then the snake is told, you have killed the boy. And the snake says, I have not killed him. Yama, the god of death, has killed. Yama says, I have not killed him. He is killed by Kala. His time had come. The appointed time. You see? And Krishna is saying the same thing. This appointed time, most of the Swamis, the Gurus, when they explain karma of three kinds, they use this term Daiva, Vidhi and Kala for what we know as the third kind of karma, which is what we know as, one is Agami karma, then there is the Sanchita karma, and the third is the Prarabdha karma. Now, Prarabdha karma is the word used or is equated with this Kala. What is that Prarabdha karma? The Agami is what we are making now. And some of it, immediate reaction will come. If I hit against a nail, immediately I will be having, my hand will be hurt. But there is some karma which will have to wait till you get its result. That is Sanchita. It will be stored up. Prarabdha is that karma for which the conditions are ripe, the time is ripe. Mr. Judge defines it by saying, karma so powerful that it cannot be counteracted by any other karma. Sometimes you have a disease, you go to this doctor, that doctor, this Baba, this Swami, everything is done. But they will all say, it is inevitable that the pain will be there and followed by death. This is Prarabdha karma, having the incurable disease. And we can multiply examples, which is Prarabdha, which means it is bound to, the precipitation has happened and is bound to happen. No matter what you do, it will happen. Something like that, Krishna is telling Arjuna that by the past karma, all these valiant warriors who are there, Bhishma, Drona, who are almost invincible. And yet the past karma has been such. They have sided with the Kauravas and created such karma by taking the side of adharma, that the karma has piled up and they have to die. So he says, I have already killed them. Be thou my immediate agent. I have already killed them. So it is a time mature. And if you don't do it, somebody else will do it. This is what is nimitta matram bhava. Be thou my immediate agent. And what is that really? What is Arjuna scared of, and what is Krishna persuading him? Krishna is saying, be thou my immediate agent, nimitta matram bhava. That means you be only the immediate instrument. Immediate instrument simply means you have no axe to grind. You are not going to have any feeling of vengeance. You are not going to be angry with them. You are not going to also go and say, oh, I killed all these great Mahanubhav, the Drona, the Bhishma, I killed them. So there is neither Karta Bhav, nor is there any attachment with the result. So if you do that, then what will happen? There'll be only, you see, karma has two aspects, physical action-reaction, and the other is the moral retribution. The action-reaction will happen because you, at the physical level you have killed, so at physical level some karma will come, the reaction. But the moral retribution, the guilty conscience, the biting conscience, the painful realization that killing is bad, the moral agony that you will go through, that will not be there. Because you are working only as an agent. You take a knife and you do something, the knife is not responsible. Knife is cutting. Its nature is to cut. Its dharma is to cut. So Arjuna is being told to do only his Kshatriya dharma, and Mr. Judge applies it to a soldier. That a soldier in the army who is fighting for his nation, not thinking that this is our enemy and should be killed, see to it that more and more of the enemies are killed only to protect my nation. The same thing. He will have only physical consequences but not the moral retribution. So this is exactly what Krishna is telling Arjuna. You do only your dharma and you will be only the immediate agent. And this is how in fact we are asked to work. And this is beautifully brought out. It's not just for one thing when we are about to do anything wrong. Let your whole life be lived as nimitta matram bhava. That as if you are an immediate agent of the God. Every duty that you perform has to be performed with that and that sentiment. So Swami Sri Savitananji, very well he has put and says, there are lots of people, all of us more or less say that I am the breadwinner of the family. So I earn the money, I support my family. And he's saying that, what do you mean that you are supporting the family and you are the breadwinner? Do you make rain to fall? Do you really have the will so that you can guide the sun to rise and sun to set? Do you go in the field and make the crops grow? Nothing of the sort. Then what are you doing when you say, I am the breadwinner? You are doing some job, getting some money, but all the rest of it, the table that you buy, the fan that you buy, the grains that you buy, so many things are there ready and you only pay the money for it. What are you doing? This karta bhav, I am doing this and I am doing that. That is what is binding you, the karta bhav. And therefore, we are being told it is very difficult to live like that. It's nice for me to repeat and say that he says, the Tukaram Maharaj, the saintly man, says, we are doing nothing. It's the God. It is God who is doing everything, because ultimately, if you go to see, even if I raise my hand, open and close my eyes, do anything, where does the energy come from? Where does the intelligence come from? For anything, the energy flows from the Atman. Let us remember the Kena Upanishad saying that, let the Atman be not there, and then the dead body has everything. The eyes are there, hands are there, feet, but why is it not able to do? The Atman has left. And that is the whole thing. We are not realizing, we are not recognizing that final karta, though that Atma is not directly getting engaged, that Atman is using everything in the universe as its agent. The Parabrahm, Paramatma or Atma uses every individual, every creature, everything as its agent. And that is how the world vyapar is going on. The business of the world, the revenge is taken, the blessings are given, the help is given. How can you manage? You can't even manage only within your family or even within your office setup that we will do the exchange properly. No. How is it managed? It's managed by that Atma, Paramatma, which not only lends energy, but chooses the appropriate instruments for the appropriate things. If that is so, what is this pride that we have, the kartabhav that we have, I am doing this, I am doing that, and therefore we are binding ourselves. And therefore he is recalling what Ramakrishna Paramhouse says, I am engine, thou art driver. So well he has put, and that is the peculiar way of Ramakrishna Paramhouse, without using any high philosophy. Simple example. The explanation is, suppose you are traveling by train. You reach your destination on time. You reach for your interview on time. You get the job. You are so happy. And you want to say, oh, thank you. Who will you praise and thank? The engine? No, the driver. The driver reached me properly on time. And suppose you don't reach. Will you curse the engine? No, you will curse and blame the driver. You are engine. And therefore, why do you worry so much? I have worked so hard. Will it succeed? Will it fail? Nothing. If we learn really to do this, renounce that kartabhav, I am not the agent, I am only the agent. And two, I am engine, he is driver. If I fail, it's fine. If I succeed, it's fine. It is his work. I am only sent here as an instrument. This instrumentality of the person is working everywhere. We are not aware. We are puny people and we have the greatest feeling of the karta and I achieve this and what will happen and what will not happen, whereas there are far greater agents. And this is something worth keeping in mind. And who are these agents? We saw elementals are agents, but we also saw behind them are supposed to be the Maharajas, the Lipikas, and there are those which we call the Dhyan Chauhans, including the greatest and the highest gods, Dhyani Buddhas. Even they are agents and nothing more. So that in the secret doctrine, she has to say that these gods, they are not the arbiters of the law. They are the agents of cosmic and karmic laws. Finished. That is the description of every god from the lowest to the highest. But let us start with those beings who are closer to us. Is a master of wisdom, an adept, ever going to say, I have done this or I have done that or I can do this? Though he says, or Mr. Jat says, they are the very Atman. They are the very law of karma. If that is so, they should really be puffed up and say, I can do anything, don't worry. They don't say that. They go ahead and write in the first chapter of the Ocean of Theosophy, they say that please make no mistake. Cycles must run their rounds and we, borne along its mighty tide, can only change some of its minor currents here and there. That is about all. Some minor currents we can change here and there. And therefore they say very humbly, but very clearly, that in individual karma we can never interfere. And that is why foolish were the people who at the time of HPB thought, masters are there, we are doing so much work for theosophy, then why don't they do something? And such requests were sent to the masters, unfortunately, where my son is not well or is dying, let the master do something about it. I have lost my job and I am running short of money, let the master do something about it. What do you think? And she says, with them everything is possible and everything is impossible. So, the masters are not arbiters of the law, and individual karma we can never interfere. But when there is collective karma, we can, wherever the collective karma permits for a community or for a nation, we can here and there change something and give a relief and direct the destiny of that nation or community in this or that direction. Otherwise, the master says that nations have sometimes heaped against them such terrible karma that we can only helplessly watch that nation destroy itself. Like a torch dipped into water, it disappears. And we can do nothing about it. For India, the master says, India has been going down for last 1,000 years and it will take her equally long to come up again. HPB says for the masters and India, India is motherland of my masters. And you will say, if it is motherland of the masters, why doesn't he do something? Little partiality. They can't do. They are saying, we are watching it go down and it will take her time, but it will come up again. But what help can be given? They have given. Time will not permit. In what way at every point they have given the help in changing the direction of India's destiny? On a much larger scale, they have done it with other nations. Very frequently it has come from this platform. What did they do with America? There were agents made use of. Who were the agents? Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, the Freemasons, going and meeting Thomas Paine, a British man, and then he is persuaded to come to America. Masters send ideas which he calls the visitors coming to me, based on the ideas he writes, the common sense, the book Common Sense. It awakens the Americans. And then they fight for their independence, and that's how the American independence is won. The agents were these people. And the same agent is Abraham Lincoln, who says in his biography we read, I always felt that I am being used as an instrument for something good. And there he was, time will not permit, but it was nearly impossible, and he wins the election and becomes a president. And he is able to abolish slavery. And the same is true of Bismarck, who also felt that he is being used as an instrument for something good, and many things are being done through him. This is the way they have worked. It's only, as Mr. Judd says, if the great ones will reveal their occult record, we would know how so many individuals were used as agents by them. This is the way in which the masters have worked, and they have used the individuals. But the interference as to putting things right for this country or that has never happened by going against the law of karma. At one point they say, yes, a lot of treasure was found there, somewhere. And a certain nation required a lot of financial help. And they are admitting it, that in some way all that treasure was made available to help that country financially. Many such here and there examples are there. But how? Because the karma of that country would have permitted. Let's not think that they are being partial to one country and not to the other. So in the same way, now we will appreciate the masters cannot interfere with the law, so can our Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, our Lakshmi Devi, our Saraswati, our Annapurna Devi, or that God, or this God, or Ganesha, none of them, no matter high, no matter how low, they are only agents of karma. Once for all, if we accept this, then we would appreciate words of Lord Buddha. So beautifully he has put, it's the poetic language of Sir Edwin Arnold, where he says, "Seek not from the helpless gods by gifts and hymn, nor bribe with blood, nor feed with fruits and cakes. Within yourselves deliverance must be sought. Each man his prison makes. You have made your prison, you come out of it. You have to deliver yourself. Every now and then you go to Vaishnavi Devi, you go this Devi temple, that Devi temple, Ganesh Puja, this worship, that worship, this vrat, thus. All of this, you may feel it has brought the result. But actually, it was anyway going to happen, even if you didn't do it. But you attribute it to this puja or this god, whereas, as Mr. Judge gives another explanation, that somebody is praying and the prayer is caught by the right person who is wanting to give donation, and there he comes next day to your door and you say, "My Devi has done it. Your good thoughts and intention has reached and he has come." So we know that, don't know the rationale, and we keep thinking it is these gods and goddesses. No. They cannot interfere. They are only the agents of karma, and therefore helpless. Seek not from helpless gods. Appropriate words are used by the writer over here. They are helpless. They can't. And if at all sometimes a yogi can, and this is HPV, can really interfere with your karma, at best he will postpone it. And if he postpones it, she says, it will come back to you with tenfold greater power. Are we ready? I can't bear even this much. And then, thank God it has gone. But it is with what we call as compound interest. It will come back to me and I will be paying it. So why do we deal in this? Why do we not remember what he says? Each man his prison makes. Within yourselves, deliverance must be sought. The only and only thing that can guide and help and take us out of the calamity is our Atman, who can guide us on the right path and not work some magic and take us out of calamity. So not only do we first learn to live the life as being only the Nimitta Matram, whether good or bad happens, but also not go and run to masters, gods, goddesses, or any high beings, because they are also the agents of karma. So this is very practical, and in carrying out the work of theosophy, the same thing has to be remembered. Why should Mr. Crosby have to come and say, it is not as if we are preeminently fit for this work, but there is no one else to do it. The person who revived theosophy and brought it once again on the right track in its pristine pure state, along the right lines and the right principles, doesn't want to take any credit. He says, it's not as if we are preeminently fit, but there is no one else to do it, so we are doing this work. With that humility and impersonality, he has given, and we are very, very grateful to him, to get the recorded writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Judge in the pure form. And he is telling us and reminding us that masters, they are the custodians of knowledge, but they are looking for companions and agents to rediscover and promulgate the knowledge. So if we won't go with pride and say, I have done this and I have done that, especially when we are doing theosophical work, it will really bring a bountiful crop, not only the individual, for also for humanity. As Light on the Path says, he who would play at being a little guru will poison the minds of those who are listening to him. So you don't play at being a guru, you don't play at being someone who is doing the work, but just be a channel. And with that thought, we will end Sri B.P. Wadia. Again and again, at many places, he is pointing out, every student must try to become a channel. That I am only the channel and let the master work through me. All the molding, all that is the non-essential in you will be shaved off by the greater powers if we have the humility to work only as a channel. Our time is up. If there is a quick question, we would want to take it. 2 or 3 minutes are there. If anyone has any question ready, can ask. This is a kind of a side question where the question is that we always say that karma in a way takes into account all the different aspects, what we may call as the extenuating circumstances under which you had done it. I couldn't have helped, the other person was so angry that I lost my temper. I couldn't help, I was in such dire poverty that I stole that thing. Whatever. Karma takes into account your state of progress, your knowledge, your condition, your inner state, your past karma, everything. Why is it that when the karmic consequences come, the person is not able to take, they even go and commit suicide? This also is under karma. Under karma, they have brought such skandhas, such sanskaras, such vasanas, that they have not really worked on that aspect of themselves where you would stand firm against the calamities of life. Why do you think someone who is failing in a 12th standard exam should go and commit suicide? Why do you think that someone who is told you will not be allowed to take part in Dance India dance show should go and commit suicide? Why do you think, and we can really have number of examples. This is the temperament with which they are born, and that is the aspect which they have to work on. What else can we say? But there is that other statement also. Karma does not give you more than you can bear. And if that is the statement, and that coming from the teachers of theosophy, let us take it at least as a working hypothesis. It may not gel well with us, because when we see someone who is so much in a kind of a dire pain and suffering, you may feel, how can a human being bear it? And yet, if he were to only endeavor and not give up too soon, many times it happens, no? For our own case, we see, only if I had worked a little hard and not given up, maybe I would have. Such things are there. So, this is not in our hands. It's a question of your working upon your that aspect of endurance. Some people buckle down under little pressure. And for some people, great pressure also is like nothing. They take it in stride and you feel still they are smiling. You know that, my God, with from such circumstances, sometimes our own servant maids are coming. Sometimes those who are doing a hard labor, they are coming from what circumstances. Look at their honesty. Look at their cheerful nature. Now you can again have a question, how is it that he has a nature? This is a question of working on that aspect. And therefore, let us learn that lesson from them, that let's work on that aspect of us, that we will increase our endurance. So that if today I can bear this, let me increase my karmic stamina so that I can bear some more and some more. Secondly, those who know that suicide does not give you relief, This is what Through the Gates of Gold says. For most people, unless and until that high philosophy is known, for most people, what is suicide? It is an escape. Whereas Through the Gates of Gold says, he embraces this death, thinking that he has escaped the pain and the misery and suffering. He doesn't know that he is going to embrace more active form of misery. Perfect. Completely verbatim we are saying. More active form of misery. And we are given description that after death, minus the physical body, everything is intact. Your desires, your agony, you are able to see people. Only and only your physical body is not there. And the helplessness with which you will see the agony, the helplessness with which you will feel the desires which you can't satisfy because no body is there. Just, if you knew this, you will think 50 times before just rushing and putting yourself on the railway track. This is another angle, but we can't say that we have really done justice. But this is the thing that we can maybe keep in mind, and maybe these people would be dissuaded. And that's how again and again we speak about the suicide, so that we know what it is. Not what is known to the general people, but what the theosophical explanation is. We are sorry, the time is up.